You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Good morning. It is Monday the 26th of October. My name is Petri Redlingace and I'm standing in for Simon Brown this week, who has gone to the beach. So I'm going to be taking the opportunity to change the focus of the show a little bit this week. We're going to be chatting to somebody every day this week on a sort of educational topic around investing and trading. But that's for the rest of the week. Today we have on the show Nick Kunze, who's going to be talking us for this morning. There seems to be a bit of a great rotation happening on the JSE. It was quite topical last week. The return of the dreaded word value, perhaps. So we'll hear what Nick's thoughts are around that, as well as him taking us through how markets are looking this morning and how we are set to start off this week. Then after that, we'll be chatting a little bit to Samantha Steyn, who is the Chief Investment Officer at Cannon Asset Managers, about basically the fundamentals of fundamental analysis, why it's important, how we use it, why we use it, and how we use it to make long-term decisions when it comes to the companies that we choose to invest in. First this morning, though, let's have a look at some of the headlines from the MoneyWeb website. Just give me one second to pull those up. Early this morning, on the some of the headlines coming out, we see Transnet posts positive revenue increase. They were actually meant to speak to us today, but they cancelled at the last minute. It's a bit disappointing, but there are some details on that on the MoneyWeb website, as well as Distell's new remuneration policy gets the nod from shareholders. They put out a trading statement late on Friday, so maybe also early morning on Friday, so maybe we can get some insight from Nick on that as well. First, though, morning markets. We'll run through some of the stuff that we keep an eye on. Looking at international markets and how they've been trading, generally we get a fairly good sense of what the week is going to be like. So let's have a look. S&P 500 futures currently pointing up. They're trading at 3,465, so that's up around 0.33%. In Asia, the Hang Seng is trading positive as well, 0.5% higher. Tencent is closed today, or China is closed today, so no, we'll get no lead from Tencent this morning. But the sort of Asian markets are looking relatively mixed, mostly softer though. Billiton down in Australia as well. S&P ASX 200 futures, which is the Australian index, also down around 0.5%. Rand currently trading at 16 Rand 25, so that's about 0.5% on the back foot as well. Gold trading slightly lower, around 0.33% on the downside as well. So it seems to be a bit of a muted start to the week. We'll get some more details from that in a second from Nick.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Good morning, Nick. Thank you very much for taking the time to join and chat with us today.
Morning, Petri.
How's the weekend? We've got a little bit of extra time. We didn't have we had a cancellation of Transnet, so we can take our time this morning and have a proper chat.
Oh, the weekend. Yeah, it was a good weekend, actually. I mean, you know, one of these gorgeous Joburg summer days. Two brides, Saturday and a Sunday, double hitter in the swimming pool with the kids, family, friends. So, yeah, and it was an awesome weekend.
Very nice.
Back to work with a bump this morning.
Yeah. And talking about a bump, we had a bit of a bumper volume traded on the JSE last week. Wednesday, Thursday, Friday were pretty good. Both Thursday and Friday were, you know, felt like it was a couple of years ago when we actually saw some decent volumes trading. I've got a bit of a... I got a bit of an observation, Nick. There seems to be a bit of a sector rotation going on. I know that you chatted about this a little bit last week as well. You know, it feels as though maybe there's a bit of an opportunity here for SA Inc. or that value play to come into the JSE. Do you think we're just being optimistic?
Yeah, it's a hope that kills you in this country. I think it certainly has that feel about it. I mean, we had, as you said, we had that sort of, you know, a few weeks ago with you know, struggling to do, you know, 15, 16 billion sort of Rand value trade. It was really, really dire sort of trading volumes. And then, as you said, the last few days, all of a sudden, we're back in the sort of 22s, 23s, 24s. So certainly it's nice to see, I guess you have to validate sort of moves and sort of trends and stuff like that with volume to back it up. at least we're seeing it. And I tend to agree with you. I think we're seeing, I mean, the one thing you've got to say about South African shares on the JSE is they're cheap. I mean, no one can dispute that. Mm. Even relative to our emerging market peers. The one positive, all the other negatives that we always moan about with investing in South Africa, the one positive is that it's cheap. So I think you're getting a real, it's coming up to year end. I think there's a little bit of rotation. American markets are probably a little bit frothy, even, you know, at these current levels. And American markets and sort of a lot of the sort of, I guess, the main markets we talk about, the FTSE, et cetera, are not cheap. They're expensive. And we're verging on the more frothy side. And I guess, you know, it had that feel that maybe it was sort of a big emerging market fund or someone was looking for a little bit of value. And I think, you know, going into some of these SA Inc. stocks are looking attractive. I also got another theory, which is I think that, you know, when we saw the likes of Afrox being delisted, for example, with Libra taking it off, I wonder if that wasn't also a sign that, you know, some large overseas companies see value in South African shares. And to put, you know, 10, 20, 30 sort of, you know, $1 million or whatever into a day's trade into the JSE is not a big ask.
Much to them,
yeah. Yeah, you know, and it can move our markets. I wonder if there's not a bit of bargain hunting from that sort of story breaking as well.
Yeah, because it seems to be, well, obviously the SA Inc. stocks, banks, and on Friday, finally, the retailers came. But there also seems to be a little bit of, some really violent moves in the sort of mid to small cap space, right? And we know those are generally less liquid and they tend to move a bit more violently, but it does feel as though there's been some big buying in some of the smaller counters.
Big time. I mean, I took a number of calls last week from clients sort of saying, okay, so Afrox is delisted, a couple others delisting.
What's next?
You know, what else looks next? And if they're not going to, if they don't see value on the bourse, well, then how much are they going to pay 20, 30% premium to take it off and delist it? So we sort of had a lot of that sort of play last week as well. But you're right. I mean, the likes of EOH and a few of the other smaller caps. I mean, some violent moves. I mean, 15-20%, which is not, which is quite unusual for our sort of market anyway.
Yeah. And then trying to get a bit of a feel for what to expect this week. We've got U.S. elections coming up. We've got we heard some talk. I don't quite know how it turned out, but you know, some rhetoric around a stimulus deal before the elections. I mean, what are the chances of that happening before the weekend?
I think very slim. Look, I mean, that's been the on-off story for the last few weeks. And every time the market goes up, you know, the market commentators put it towards, you know, stimulus hopes and all the rest of it. But I think it's very unlikely with elections less than, I mean, what is it, 17, 18 days away. So, I mean, I don't even sort of hold your hat on that one. But, I mean, the big story for me, two big ones for me this week, obviously, locally, you've got the medium-term budget on Wednesday. I mean, that's going to certainly set the tone for the rand-dollar traders out there. And also for JSE, I think, you know, if it comes out fairly positive, you might expect this momentum to continue. Or if Tito is a little bit more blunt and a bit more shocking with some news, maybe it won't. But so Wednesday, that's the big one for me. And then, of course, earnings season in the States. I mean, that continues. There's some big numbers this week. We've got all the techies are reporting. Last week was the turn of the banks. This week is the techies. We've got Thursday, I think, Apple and Amazon, world's biggest companies, reporting. Microsoft, I think, is on Tuesday. We've got Facebook as well this week. So for those tech traders out there, this is a big one as well. So I think, yeah, there's a lot to sink our teeth into this week.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Thank you. And then sort of one last thing I just wanted to touch on with you. I don't know. I mean, I think I want to jump back to this sector rotation type of theorem. I mean, where would we hide basically in a world where you know, there's all this uncertainty? We've seen a little bit of a start of a sector rotation thing. And what happens? So we all get very positive and that going into this week, and then we end up with a contested election, because I think that's going to be a lot closer than what people realize.
Agreed.
I mean, where can we hide in that situation? Do we even get swept up in this, you know, sector rotation narrative for this week and maybe start buying some locals, or do we just wait until the election is finished and see what happens?
Look, I mean, there's certainly caution warranted that's needed. I mean, and I tend to agree with you. I think this election's going to be a lot closer than people think. And if it is a contest, it's the last thing I want to do. Look, I would tend to say, if you want to park cash, you would, I think the theme, whether it's a contested election or not, or even if it's not a contested, is probably a weaker dollar in the months to come. That seems to be what sort of is playing out. So on the back of that, you could, you know, you want to stick your money in things that do well for a weaker dollar. So commodities, not necessarily your typical gold shares, but I mean, even
more
even
like the industrial type.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I'm sort of a bit of a big fan of the idea that there's going to be a bit of sort of food inflation coming quite soon. I think we're really starting to see it. So again, weaker dollar, you're soft. You can look at your food producers in South Africa, your Astrals and Quantum Foods and the smaller caps and that sort of stuff. Not necessarily saying that's where you want to stick your cash, but that's the general theme, I think, that will play out for the next few months at weaker dollar. So that's what I'd be looking parking my cash for now.
Yeah, and I have to agree with you. We've, you know, on the back of all the stimulus and the sort of printing, something like 20% of all the US dollars ever made were made this year, right?
No, that's
so that's definitely going to put some pressure on the dollar index, at least.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, look, everyone's been calling the demise of the dollar for 1 or 2 decades now, to no avail. But I mean, it is the reserve currency of the world for a reason. But as you said, you point out the stats like you've mentioned now and what you're seeing happening and the possibility there might even be we talk about sector rotation in the JSC, but you know, someone could easily be rotating out of the US, which has run really, really hard. It's been the outperformer. Maybe moving money across into Asia or into Europe, you'll see a rotation out of the US as well. So another reason to be a little bit short the dollar. So I think that for me is going to be the theme for the next few months.
All right. Thank you very much. Thank you for chatting to us this morning. That is Nick Kunze. He's a portfolio manager at Sanlam Private Wealth.
MoneyWeb now on the money. Also available on podcast.
All righty. Next up, we are speaking to Samantha Steyn, who is the Chief Investment Officer at Cannon Asset Managers, who will be chatting to us a little bit about some fundamental analysis. Good morning, Samantha. Are you with us?
Hi, Petri. How are you?
Well, thanks. And yourself?
I'm good, thanks.
All righty. So as you know, we want to do a bit of an educational spin on this week. So I want to sort of lay some groundwork for you first. Generally, people tend to come into financial markets, they want to start trading, they want to start investing, and the very first thing that they learn, essentially, is fundamental analysis. It's step 101. Welcome to Investing 101. This is fundamental analysis. You have to look at companies' balance sheets and all this stuff, and they take one look at it and they go, well, I think I'm going to study technical analysis because it's easier, right? So I wanted to chat to you a little bit about, you know, what is fundamental analysis really? Why do we use it? How do we use it? And how do we use it particularly to make longer-term decisions when it comes to choosing the companies that we invest in?
Yeah, so I mean, fundamental analysis is quite a broad word. I mean, when I speak of fundamental analysis, really the idea is to get to know a company quite intimately. I mean, you want to invest in this company, there's a price to pay for it, and until you fully understand the company, I don't see how you understand what you're paying for or what price you're willing to pay for it. I mean, similar to when you're going to buy a house, you'll have a sense of value depending on the number of rooms or bathrooms, the area, etc. And it's no different when investing in companies. So essentially, fundamental analysis is having a look at, as you mentioned, the financial statements. But more than that, it's understanding the business model, what drives the earnings of this company, getting a understanding of the competitive environment, the peers, the margins, do they have any competitive advantage? And it's really doing a deep dive into the company to get a good understanding of what you are essentially buying. I mean, there are prices, as you mentioned, technical analysis. Often you, I won't even speak about technical analysis, but from our point of view, that's where it starts. So fundamental analysis always starts with understanding the company.
Yeah, yeah, okay. And you want to sort of find out, things like how do they make money, where do they make money, what currency do they earn in, what are the risks, what projects are they busy with? I mean, what are some of the things that you look for in a business? You know, we can talk about it a little bit.
So the first thing, we can go into quite a bit of detail, but I think the first thing is understanding the business model. I mean, if you don't thoroughly understand a company's business model, that's a major risk. I mean, for us, it's about managing risk. That's the first point of departure. So for me, it would be understanding the business model. What do they sell? who's their customer? Do they have pricing power? Are they a price taker? So, for example, if you look at the resource companies, they're pretty much a price taker. They don't determine the price of the commodity they sell. That's determined in the market. And that kind of gives you a sense of the business model of the company, high fixed costs, price takers, quite cyclical. So you start getting a sense of the risks of this company and the underlying business model. Because if you make a mistake on that first point, it doesn't matter what price you pay. If you invest in a poor business model, you can lose a lot of money. So for me, I spend a lot of time going through the company's financials. I try to look at, I would say a starting point would be at least 8 years financial statements, just to get a sense of the history of the company. It gives you quite a bit of understanding.
It's a lot of reading.
Yeah, it's a lot of reading, but that's the point. I mean, you want to have a thorough understanding about this company and how they tend to perform in different environments and business cycles. So 7 to 8 years gives you a good sense of that. And management often guide, and it gives you just a good story behind the company to see, do they deliver on it? Has their margins been under pressure? Stuff like that. So I would definitely say to investors that are starting to look at companies, that's your first point of departure. And then you can really go into the nitty-gritties of price earnings ratio, dividend yield, price to book, just to get a sense of metrics.
I was going to ask you, how important is this ratio analysis stuff? Because I realize that a lot of people often get stuck on PEs and dividend yields and that kind of stuff without actually, you know, they're going, oh, well, it's really cheap because the PE is 7, right? And yes, okay, historically that's cheap, but that's not the whole picture.
Yeah, I mean, it is important. I mean, you need to understand what you're paying, what you're buying. And obviously PE is quite a naive and quite an easy metric to look at, but it does give you a sense of what you're paying relative to their peers. And like I said, if you understood the business model, paying a higher price earnings ratio for a certain company that has got higher margins versus peers kind of then makes sense. So it does give you, that's why I say understanding the business and the details of the company
and the industry
is the first point,
right?
Because and the industry surroundings, so that when you do get to the valuation, you start to build the picture. Okay, we understand why First Rand trades at a premium to the other banks. It has a higher return on equity. It is a higher quality business, so it's somewhat justified to pay a premium for that company. So if you didn't have the background, if you jump into the metrics, it's kind of, you're losing the art behind the science. It really doesn't give you the full picture or understanding. Likewise with dividend yield. I mean, a 7% dividend yield means nothing to me if I don't understand where it's coming from, what's driving it. It's like the resource companies. I mean, they're trading at extremely high dividend yield where everyone else is cutting. But if you understand what's driving that, you know, well, yes, it might be good now for year two, 3 years, but it's unsustainable, very cyclical company driven by high commodity prices, which are likely to come and go. So it really does help doing step one before you go into step two. But step two does help. I mean, when you're looking at those ratios, it does help give you a sense of the valuation of the company.
All right. And then if you were to give advice to sort of someone who's relatively young, just maybe out of university or out of high school, who wanted to start getting into this and doesn't necessarily have a background in finance, have you got any sort of suggested books or a starting point for newer investors to really get their heads around this? What is essentially step one in this process, right? It is probably the most sort of underrated form of analysis out there because it's really hard. So how do we, have you got a sort of any advice on how to make that easier or where to start or what to read?
Yeah, I mean, I think for anyone coming into the industry, where to start would definitely be standing on the shoulders of giants. There's a load of books out there on investing, and I think that's definitely the place to start. I mean, Margin of Safety by Seth Klarman's a good book to read. One Up on Wall Street, Common Stocks, Uncommon Profits by Philip Fisher. I mean, those are really easy reads, and yeah, I think really is the place to start. You really want to learn from those that have been in the industry, in the market, been doing this for years and years and have been successful at it. if you really want to get into deep valuation, then applied value investing by Joseph Calandro and valuation by Aswath Damodaran. I mean, those are books more on valuation
really
methods.
Yeah,
really intense, a bit harder reading.
Yeah, but for the dedicated student, I mean, they're going to be worth it, right?
Yeah, that's really if you dedicate it and you really like getting you fully understand the basics of investing and you really want to get into that. But I mean, there's so much information on the web nowadays. I mean, Aswath Damodaran has a lot of his lectures on YouTube, and there's so much. I mean, you can literally subscribe to Howard Marks's memos, read Warren Buffett's annual newsletter. So really, there's so much information. I mean, if this is really your passion and you want to get to know it, I would say reading is by far going to be the best teacher out there for you.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much, Samantha. I really appreciate your time this morning. That was Samantha Stain, who's the Chief Investment Officer at Cannon Asset Managers. And that is all that we have time for today. Can you believe it? 20 minutes is up. We'll be back tomorrow morning. I almost said next morning. We'll be back tomorrow morning at 6:30 live. Thank you very much to the team on the Money website, both Caldora and Eddie, for making this happen. Simon, I hope you're having a wonderful holiday. And we'll chat to you tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.